This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 885. Today, Amateur Traveler talks about castles and codebreakers, Copernicus and klezmer music, pierogies, ghettos, and Chopin. As we go to the Polish cities of Warsaw, Krakow, and Poznan. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about Poland. I'd like to welcome back to the show Sharon Kurtz from SharonKKurtz.com. And Sharon has come to talk to us about Poland this time. Sharon, welcome back to Amateur Traveler.
Thank you so much, Chris.
And I say welcome back. Sharon came on a couple of years ago, I want to say, talking about a windjammer barefoot cruise up the coast of Maine. But we're going to Poland this time. What itinerary have you laid out for us?
I think travelers should go to start in Warsaw and go to Krakow and Poznan. That makes, they're perfectly spaced. You can see a lot in those three cities in a week.
Okay. And why should someone go to Poland? Let's start with that.
First of all, it is a beautiful country. It's a blend of history that goes back to the 10th century. And then it has sad history, World War II, and then they were occupied by the Soviets and got their independence in 1989. And some people seem to have this feeling that they're gray and it's sad and dark, and nothing could be further from the truth. They're like us. It's vibrant and there's families, and it's really an exciting place to go in Central Europe. And it's centrally located in the middle of Europe.
Excellent. We used to think of it as Eastern Europe just because it was behind the Iron Curtain, but it really is Central Europe.
Oh, no. They take offense to that.
They do
not want to hear Eastern Europe. No, they are Central Europe. They make a point because they're modern and they are part of NATO and in the EU, and they want to slough off that sad part of their history.
Excellent. So you started us in Warsaw.
Yes.
And what are we doing in Warsaw?
Warsaw. First of all, go to the Old Town. The Old Town is beautiful. It's at Old Town Square. But what's surprising is it's completely reconstructed, because when the Nazis came in World War II, before they left, they bombed the total city and flattened the Old Town to the ground. But the Poles just weren't going to give up, and they very quickly recreated the entire town. So you would never know it's a recreation, but it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Is there anything particular in the Old Town that you're recommending that we see while we're there?
Yes, it's a big square with a big opening in the middle. And the centerpiece is this fountain with a big mermaid sculpture. And she's beautiful. She's got a big sword and she's very fierce looking. And I didn't know that's the symbol of Warsaw. She's for protection. She's supposed to show them that they are strong and resilient and courageous. So there is a museum there. It's the history of Warsaw itself in one of the old townhouses, merchant houses that was not destroyed. And it's many stories tall. They go back to the early history, even 10th, 11th century.
Okay. Anything else you would recommend in Warsaw?
Yeah. It's where Chopin was born, and they were very proud of him. So there is a Chopin Museum, and there's a park in town. I'll make a mess of it, what it's called, but it's spelled with a Lazinski. I have written down somewhere how you pronounce it, but it's a big, beautiful park in the middle of Warsaw, and they have a sculpture of Chopin, and every Sunday they have free classical concerts in the summer, and everybody goes. And it's a beautiful walk and a place to be in nature. And I came in October and I was a little too late, so they had already closed. But I recommend going to a Chopin concert while you're there. I went to one in Old Town. And then they have histories, museums that are fascinating.
Well, and before you get to the museums, you mentioned summer versus fall. Do you have a recommendation for the time of year that you would recommend for visiting?
Yeah. Do not go in the winter. It's cold and dreary. So late spring through fall is, I was there to the middle of October and it was beautiful weather.
Okay. And then you mentioned museums.
Yes. They have several that are very impactful. One is the Warsaw Uprising Museum, mm-hmm. and it's interactive. It is really overwhelming, but it tells the history of the uprising and what they were faced with and how they fought through the sewers. And that was very interesting. And then they had a museum called The History of Poland Jews. And okay. that is fascinating. It tells the whole history. It was interesting, but very sad. They don't shy away from the sad parts of their history with so many Jews annihilated through the years.
Okay.
Warsaw is the capital city and it's the biggest. So it's a modern, a vibrant cityscape now with big skyscrapers in different areas of the city. But my favorite was the old town and the museums and mm-hmm. the bustling life of the city.
Now, you also mentioned before we started recording that you were there as a travel writer, which we've said on the show before, but we'll say at this time that you're a travel writer tending to write for traditional press, as I recall. Things on paper. I recall that those still exist. And yeah. that you were there to write about restaurants in Poland.
Yes. I was there for 9 days as a guest for the Tourism Bureau to write mm-hmm. about these restaurants. But they also provided tours of each city for me.
Sure.
And I learned a lot. But then I hadn't had enough yet. So I stayed for 5 extra days in Warsaw and moved to a hotel that was a palace. And
okay.
I'll get to that when we get to where do you stay in Poland, because it's one of my finds.
Oh, let's not keep people in suspense. Where are you recommending we
okay.
stay in Warsaw?
In Warsaw, I first stayed when I was a guest of the Tourism Bureau from a modern high-rise called NYX. And it's right next to the train station. It was about $100 a night, a beautiful modern hotel. But when I went back for 5 days on my own dime, I stayed at the Hotel Verte. The history of it was two palaces right near the old town that were owned by the king and his family. And they were virtually destroyed during World War II. But the king had hired Canaletto, the famous Italian painter, to come paint Warsaw for him. And he painted these palaces. And so after the war, when they went to reconstruct it, they went to his paintings and very carefully reconstructed the two palaces into one. And that now is a Marriott property. And you can use your points to stay there. So that's what I did.
Okay. I haven't had the chance to stay in that many palaces.
Yeah.
A few. It's always a fun thing.
Oh, it was. It was a great place.
To live the life to which I'd like to become accustomed.
Yeah.
I want to get back to the restaurants, though. You mentioned that you were there to write about restaurants, but not just
yes.
any restaurants.
One of the things Poland is very proud of is that the Michelin Guide organization came into Poland and they targeted 27 restaurants in these three cities, Warsaw, Krakow, and Poznan. And They all got Michelin recommendations. There's in Poland one-star restaurant, two stars, and the rest are various recommendations. But they have a new thing called the Bib Gourmand, which means good value for money. So I went to a few of those, but in my time there, I ate at 14 Michelin restaurants.
And in I took your time my, there in 9 days.
Yeah. I took my stretchy pants and people say, how did you not come back 20 pounds heavier? But I walked everywhere and I didn't eat unless it was a meal that I was supposed to write about. But I was blown away. The quality of the food there, and they're so proud of their produce and everything is local. And I ate more pierogies than I have in my entire life.
Okay, so they are doing traditional Polish food, just well made.
Yes, they have traditional Polish food, but then they have twist. So okay. If it's a Michelin star restaurant, you can know that it's elevated. And they might have pierogi, but they're filled with duck, or they're filled with blood sausage, or they're very special. But then in Poznan, I went to this just a neighborhood haunt that they specialize in pierogies. It's cheap, and they have a whole glass front where the ladies are all making pierogi, and you can watch them. And I don't know if you know about it, but people say it's really difficult. You have to roll these little doughs, and you have to pinch them just right. And these ladies were as fast as lightning. So that was fun.
Okay. As we talk about the ones in Warsaw, are there ones that you want to mention of the restaurants that you were at either on your own or that were that were recommended to you by the tourism board? Okay.
I do. I ate at, I think, four restaurants or five in Warsaw, and three in particular. One was my very first night. I got in on the plane and the plane was late and my reservation was like in an hour, and I had to get from the airport to the hotel, drop my bags and run to the restaurant. But it's called Butchery and Wine. Okay. It's got a designation called Bib Gourmand, and it's good value for money. And it's a steak restaurant, so they use Polish beef. It's dry aged, so they have it hanging in these refrigerated cabinets for you to see. And it was just delicious. And then I ate at, it's called Declanti. It has the biggest wine cellar in Poland. And typically, you don't think of wine when you think of Poland. But for these Michelin restaurants, it's very important for them to have a elevated wine program. So they had a huge wine cellar, but they were small and excellent. That was a fine dining experience. But then my third in Warsaw is my very favorite. It's called the Vodka House. It's called Elixir Dom Vodka. And vodka in Polish means little water. So this restaurant, which was not expensive, they had 75 types of vodka. And they had a museum. It was like one of the only vodka museums in the world where the owner had the history of vodka in Poland. So I went through the museum with a guide, and they had a bottle that had never been opened from, I can't tell you how old it was, but it gave the history. But then at dinner, they give, I kid you not, a little glass of vodka with every course. So I had different vodkas with every course, and I think I had duck pierogi, and I had steak tartare. And then for dessert, I had espresso vodka. And then I walked home. No driving for me.
Okay. What else should people do while they're in Warsaw?
The Royal Castle, the wonderful hotel I stayed in, the Hotel Verte, it was right at Old Town. So they still have a Royal Castle, and they have these wonderful old streets and the parks. They have these green spaces, more green spaces than I expected for a beautiful big city. So I would go to the parks. I would go to the museums and the restaurants at Old Town, especially.
Okay. And the Royal Palace, that's the, and I don't know how to pronounce things in Polish, but the Willidau Palace?
That's one palace, but the Royal Palace is different. It's right in Old Square. It's more like a museum now. They have a famous museum in it, but then the famous palace is the Willidau Palace that you mentioned.
Okay.
Oh, but then I would go to the Chopin Museum. Chopin is from Warsaw, and they're proud of it. So there is a museum, mm-hmm. and there's a special church where during the war, he had to flee and couldn't come back, and he died in Paris. But it was so important to him that in his will, he said, I must be buried in Warsaw. So they took his heart. They got his heart, and it's in this church in a special cabinet. That's important. And then Copernicus, the famous mathematician, was born in Warsaw. And they have a famous statue of Copernicus and a museum as well about science.
Okay.
ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
You say during the war, but Chopin died in 1849, so I don't know.
I think
an
early war. Yeah. You know, they had a partition and then World War One, and then at some point he was banished and he couldn't make it back into Poland.
Okay. What else should we do in Warsaw? Are we wrapping up our work?
I think that's Warsaw wrapped up. Okay. And then the next part is Krakow. Mm-hmm. Krakow is the cultural capital of Poland. It's only 2 hours on the train. And that is how I think travelers should get around. The trains are cheap and really well run, and it's easy to get from city to city. And then when you get to the city, they have public transportation that really works well in trams and Ubers. And so Krakow, it is a gorgeous city that was not destroyed during World War II. So it is just impressive with beautiful townhouses, and it's colorful. And it's filled with history and charm. And so the Old Town is an UNESCO World Heritage Site. It's got that well-preserved medieval city center. Mm-hmm. And then I loved the historic Jewish quarter, the Kazimierz district. Mm-hmm. It had restaurants and bars and old Jewish synagogues and really famous old cemeteries. But Krakow was a beautiful place to visit. It was a smaller city than Warsaw. Mm-hmm. So I loved St. Mary's Basilica. It is in the Old Town, and it's a famous, beautiful church. Beautiful inside and out. But every day on the hour, they have a trumpeter that plays the most haunting tune. It goes back to the 13th century. I believe a trumpeter, when they were being sacked by the Mongols, got shot in the throat And as a memory to his memory, this trumpeter goes up and plays this haunting tune that just goes through the whole square. So that was a beautiful thing to do. I loved the Royal Wawel Castle. That is the castle in Krakow. It is a beautiful castle, and it's got a cathedral that is gorgeous as well. So that is a not to be missed. They do history so well in Poland, and they've captured all of it. If it was hurt in the war, they recreated it, but it's Gothic. Yeah, the architecture is fabulous in there.
And the castle dominates the city. It's up on the hill above the
city.
Yes. I liked, so now Krakow I have been to. I also liked on the back side of the castle. We did a walking tour of Krakow on an amateur traveler tour, actually, where we went to Prague, Krakow, and Budapest. And I like the, on the backside, you get the fire-breathing dragon sculpture in the back of the, I never know, remember how to pronounce it, whether I pronounce my W's as V's in Polish or not, but it's the Wawel or
it.
The Wawel.
I
think it's the Wawel Castle.
Wawel Castle. Mm-hmm. Yes, Polish language, it's tough. It's hard to read the signs.
The other thing I thought was really interesting about the cathedral there is it looked like it was built by a committee of architects, because there are three or four towers, maybe five if you count some of the shorter ones, that all have a different style. They look like they were built completely in different centuries with no eye towards making them look like the other ones. It felt like the committee said, let everybody do what you want.
Yeah, it was the second capital of Poland. Poznan actually was the first, but it was the second. Oh, it's got such a long history that all those kings, and it was very wealthy, Poland was. So they probably keep adding new styles to it and changing it up.
Mm-hmm. I definitely recommend, we did the tour of the castle and I enjoyed having a tour guide on that particular thing. I don't remember whether you could tour it into without a guide or not.
Let's see. I think I had my guide with me, but I believe in the cathedral, you're not allowed to take photos. And then she had to whisper to me. They're very strict about guides giving commentary in the cathedral.
Sure. Sure. I get that. What else?
Let's see. This was my favorite. Just walking the streets in the early evening, when it turns to dusk, you have that big open square, and then you have these beautiful buildings, and people just come out. And there's live music in the streets, and there's musicians, and it's lively, and it's so beautiful. That was one of my favorite things about Krakow, just walking through the historic city center.
Well, and the city center has kept its old medieval walls, so you can walk along the walls of the city center.
Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. I had a tour guide as well, and she picked me up in her little Vespa, and she asked if I wanted to tour with her. So I just jumped on the back of her Vespa, and we went all over town, and she never had to worry about parking, and I got to see a whole lot of the city that way. That was fun.
Okay. Did you do the underground museum of the old city that is in the center of the square?
I did not do that. I did the building called the Old Cloth Hall is in the middle of the square.
Right. Right under there, there is a museum.
Oh, I did not do that. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, you can see some of the foundation of the older city that even predates what's left at this point.
Oh, it was definitely beautiful. And I understand why it's like this, the cultural capital. And that's what people go. It's probably more of a tourism hub than Warsaw is. It probably is the most famous city to visit in Poland.
And what sort of things did you do while you were in Krakow besides that?
Let's see. I ate in a lot of restaurants.
Okay, let's talk about the restaurants.
The first one, I think, was called Poznosum. It means under the nose, because it was right under the castle. So it was like the restaurant under the castle. It was French-inspired, very small. Everything was tapestry-covered, little banquette with good wine. And my funny story there was, I went early. I was like one of the only diners. And then it started to get a little busier. But then between courses, they came and whispered in my ear, and I had to get up and move outside because the Prime Minister of Belgium was coming in with his entourage.
As you'll
and
have.
Yeah. So they were more important than I was. So I finished up outside, but I ate there. And then one of my favorite restaurants was called Albertina. It was like a ground floor wine cellar, but it was really, it didn't have a star. It was just a recommended, but that was the fanciest restaurant I've ever eaten in. But it was so, everything was local and the chef was a hunter. So you had venison and fresh river fish and everything was like a hunter's lodge served with really good wine.
There are three things that I'd say were the highlight for me in Krakow. One, obviously not happy place, but we did get out to Auschwitz and Birkenau, which is very close by to Krakow. And Krakow is really the city that most people will visit those from. And it's something I recommend, but it's something obviously if you're there with young kids, you'll want to use your good judgment because it's obviously a terrible place and the story behind it is awful, but that's why I recommend that people see it. But then also we did get to the salt mine guided tour, the Velitska.
I went there too. That was one of my favorites. It was so interesting. Salt was so important back in the day. It made the place very wealthy. So I got to go through the salt mine tour. That was fun.
And tell us more about the salt mine tour and your experience.
It's a little ways outside of the city, so you'll need to have your own guide or hire an Uber. But it starts above ground, and they give you a complete history of why it was important, and you go underground. And I loved everything. They had big chambers, beautiful chambers with chandeliers made of salt and sculptures made of salt. And one of the popes, maybe John Paul, had visited, and there was a sculpture of him. So it was very interesting, kind of showing why it was important and how they did it. They even showed that there was mules down there that lived down there, and they toured the wheel, and they showed minerals that they had excavated, rock salt, maybe different minerals. But it was very important to the economy there for years.
And the fact you talk about chandeliers and things like that, there's really a whole cathedral, basically, underground there, as well as the machinery, seeing what they did while they were mining the salt and dioramas and things like that as well.
Right.
Yeah, and lots of different statues. Yeah, it would have been John Paul II was the pope you were talking about there, because he was from Krakow. Or spent part of his ministry in Krakow. And I don't remember whether he was from there originally, but I think if you're going from the castle to the main square, you pass right by a place where he used to live. He's certainly important to the people of Krakow.
Yes, that is quite impressive when you leave a tunnel and you come into this huge open area that had been mined. That's why it was open. And that was the cathedral with the statues to Mary and grand chandeliers made of rock salt. So that was quite impressive.
Years ago, when I was still doing the This Week in Travel podcast, we did an episode and Gary Arndt, who is my co-host, wasn't able to make it because he was traveling, but he was in that salt mine and found a Wi-Fi signal. And so he called into the show, and so it would have been the only time we have an underground representative in the show. And unfortunately, it was a show that I hadn't pressed the record button, and so he will never forgive me to this day for missing that particular opportunity. The third thing that I really enjoyed in Krakow was the Schindler's Factory Museum tour.
Oh, see, that is on my list. I'm looking right at it. That was one of my favorite things to do. In fact, my guide took me on our little Vespa and we went to the factory tour. But Schindler's List was one of my favorite movies. So impactful. And to get to go to that factory and see the history and all the information about the Jews that he saved and the man himself, that was a really important part of my visit to Krakow.
Well, and it's now an important, significant museum about the sort of the whole Nazi occupation of of Poland, as well as the war, as well as that particular portion of it, the story of Schindler and the Jews that he was trying to save there. But I thought it was a very well presented museum, in addition to being obviously a very fascinating story.
Yeah.
Excellent. What else did you do that I didn't do here?
It sounds like we had about the same experience. I did the salt mine, Schindler's factory, the old square. My guide took me, since we had a Vespa and we had personal transportation, to the Jewish areas where in newsreels or perhaps in Schindler's List, you see where the Jews are forced to leave their ghetto and bring all their belongings out to the central area and get on lorries to take them to the concentration camp. They don't know where they're going, so they've got all their belongings. So she took me to this big open area. And it's an art installation where all they have is empty chairs. Mm-hmm. And it just reflects, you know, it's so somber. She showed me the gates where the ghetto used to be. And we went into one particular area where on the wall you saw all the information about the people that actually lived in those houses. So the Jewish history in Krakow was really somber and hard for me to get my head around the Krakow that I see today versus what it was like then.
The one thing that I found unusual and unexpected, and I won't judge good or bad, but in the old Jewish ghetto, obviously after the war, it was largely depopulated because so many people had died. And it has become an area that is well known for its nightlife, which still just strikes me as a very strange thing. But if you're looking for nightlife in Krakow, that's one of the neighborhoods where you go, which is odd.
Yeah. They had at one end of the area, they had a special remembrance. I think it was a statue of some sort with names and mm-hmm. Then, as you say, you have the nightlife, but then you also have Jewish restaurants that have old klezmer music at night. Hmm. But it's lively. It's a lively area.
It is, yeah. And I just want you to know that if you're going to Krakow, and however you deal with that, whether that's someplace that you want to do or not, that's something that would be good to know.
Yeah.
Excellent. The restaurant that I would recommend was recommended to us by, I think, our tour guide, and it's KARCZMA Regionalina. And it was a restaurant for having traditional Polish food. And so it was wonderful types of pierogi there, including having dessert pierogi with blueberries and things like that. So it was a wonderful place.
Yeah, I didn't go there. The third restaurant we went to was called Sarza. It was S-Z-A-R-A, and it was right on the edge of Old Town. And our table outdoors just faced carriages with horses, and Ghana Tour would pass right by us. But it was a Michelin-recommended restaurant, and mm-hmm. it had like a Swedish international flair. So I had gravlax, and it was not typically Polish. But it was one of the restaurants that I was assigned to go eat at.
It's a dirty, thankless job, but somebody has to do it.
It was tough. It was tough. Thank God for those stretchy pants. They came in handy.
This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by BetterHelp. In some kind of ironic coincidence, BetterHelp is sponsoring this episode after my January, where I told you before, the last time we did a BetterHelp spot, that I just lost my father, I also just lost my mother 13 days later. And I expect to be dealing with this for a while. Yet somehow we expect that things that happened back in our past have all gone away because they've been some time. Sometimes you really need to talk to someone. If you're thinking of starting therapy, whether it's to learn more positive coping skills, how to set boundaries, to empower you to be the best version of yourself, or you're just carrying stuff that you shouldn't be carrying alone, then think about BetterHelp. Give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. Switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. If you need to talk to somebody, talk to somebody. Visit betterhelp.com/traveler today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, help.com/traveler. And thanks to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler. Excellent. Anything else we want to tell people about Krakow?
Gosh, I think we covered it. I did not go to the concentration camps, not because I didn't want to, but I didn't have enough time. And you really have to have a reservation in advance. That's what I would say to people. You can't do it on the fly. You have to get it way in advance. It's very hard to get. And then it's like a full day affair.
I don't know if it was a full day or half day, but it's not something you go in and spend 15 minutes in. It does need a number of hours. In part, just because the scale, especially Birkenau, the scale of it is just amazingly large and obviously stunningly large. You know how many people were killed, and yet somehow trying to get a grip on the scale of things, how industrial they made murder, is difficult to understand until you're there. Excellent. We're going on to a different city now, and this is, I'd say, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, because my relatives on my mother's side came from the city of Poznan in the 1850s. They were not Polish. They were German because they were Prussian. And this part of Poland was Prussia at one point. And so I'm interested to hear about your experiences in Poznan.
I have a similar story. I found out in my 40s that, unbeknownst to me, I have the BRCA gene, which means they did a genetic test and found out because I have Ashkenazi Jewish heritage. And I'm a little Protestant girl from Ohio. No one knew about this heritage. But I have this gene, and we did some research and had found out it had to have come from my father's line. And we went back, and my great-grandfather and grandmother were from the Poznan area in Prussia.
Okay.
So I went there, and I had my feelers out to see how I would feel. I don't know anything else about them, and I don't know how the Jewish line got in my family or ended, because I didn't know anything about it. But so I loved Poznan. Poznan is an international city. They're known for their international trade fairs. And so they have international airport to bring in all these business people that come to these fairs, but they have a fascinating history. It's the oldest city in Poland. It's where the founder of the country started the country in the 10th century.
Okay.
So they have an old town with a market square that is beautiful, all these beautiful market houses, all colorful, all different colors, and a city hall. And Poznan, their symbol are these charging billy goats. So they okay. have a bronze statue of billy goats everywhere. And it goes back to this old legend where very early times, something about somebody burned the stag and they had to go find the billy goats. And they were going to be dinner and they escaped and they were mischievous. So that's the history. So the town hall has this clock tower, and every day at noon, these mechanical billy goats come out and turn to one another and butt heads. So that is one thing that you have to see when you go to Poznan.
Okay.
The other thing is they have what's called the Cathedral Island. You have to go to it, and it's where the oldest church in Poland is. And it has the remnants of the, they found the graves of the first king or ruler on Cathedral Island.
Okay.
So that's an important part. There's two more things that are really special in Poznan, other than the restaurants. I don't know.
We'll get to the restaurants. Okay.
All right. The two important things are, is that they have an Enigma museum, because the story, the movie we all saw about Alan Turing, and he discovered how to crack the code of the German war machine Enigma. Actually, the mathematicians came from Poznan.
Yeah, the first work to crack the German codes
yes.
was done by Polish code breakers prior to World War II.
Obviously. Yes.
They had to leave Poland in a hurry, as one might imagine when it was invaded. But definitely the work that Turing and the others did at Bletchley Park was based on some of this early work by the Polish cryptographers.
That's his laboratory. But they had a fabulous museum there, and it's interactive. And the day that I went, there were lots of school children. So they have the displays with the code cracking equipment and how ciphers work. And all the kids had different stations, and they all were cracking these codes and doing puzzles. And it was a fascinating museum that I did not expect.
One bit of trivia that helped code breakers, this is in the Bletchley Park era, one of the things you needed to know as you were trying to crack this code is you needed to have some sort of key. If you had some sort of phrase that you knew what that phrase was, it would help you in your effort. Well, they were aided by the fact that the Germans would end their dispatches with Heil Hitler. And so their rather, I don't know how you'd put it, but the process of where you had to be so loyal to the Führer that you would put that in your message made it easier to crack their code, which I thought is just wonderful irony.
Oh, geez. That was really fascinating. I didn't know a whole lot about this code breaker business other than the movie that I saw. And I certainly don't know math, but I really appreciate what I learned in that museum.
Excellent.
And the other thing about Poznan is going back to food again. They have a croissant there called the St. Martin's croissant. And you think croissants in Poland? What's the story here? Well, it goes back to the 13th. No, it goes back when Napoleon was coming through to ransack the area. And the bakers got together. There were some Turkish mercenaries fighting with Napoleon, and somehow they made these croissants because everyone was hungry, and they were so grateful that they spared the city. So it goes back to St. Martin's Day. There's a St. Martin's Day, and that's when they have this feast, and they offer these croissants, and they're very special croissants. They're big and fat, and they're filled with like poppy seeds and nuts, and they're just delicious. And they have 84 layers. So in Poznan, they have a museum, but it's not like any other museum. They even have a show with it. And so it's interactive. They have an audience, and they have these characters that come on and they tell the story, but they're in costume. And then they roll out these croissants and they ask the audience members, a few of them, to come up and help. And you have a hat and you have an apron on. And then in the end, the one I went to was at noon, and you got to see the billy goats out the window, because in the clock tower is right across the way. And then everyone's given a croissant to go home with. So that's a very special legend of Poznan, along with the billy goats, are these St. Martin's croissants. And you can't get them anywhere else in Poland, only in Poznan.
There is another connection between the croissant and the Poles that goes back further. So you know the origin of the croissant. If I said, what country is that from? You would know they're from
France.
Vienna, exactly. Austria.
Austria! No.
And they were created as celebration of victory over the Turks, hence the crescent shape. The victory over the Turks was won in large part because of the Polish hussars, the Polish flying cavalry that had these great big metal wings on their back, and this very famous charge at the battle outside the gates of Vienna. And so if it hadn't been for the Poles, we wouldn't have victory and we wouldn't have the croissant.
Ah, see, this story, there's got to be a tie-in there, because this is in Poland, and it's the Napoleon's era. And
I'm seeing that they may not go back as far as Napoleon, though. So I suspect there are many different stories locally.
Yes.
The oldest known creation of the St. Martin's croissant only goes back to 1860s. I suspect that when you're in Poland, in Poznan, you could find multiple different stories, possibly.
Poznan, when I went there, They're undergoing a massive reconstruction. Mm-hmm. It's an old city, and the city sewers are a mess. And so for like 2 years, they've had this mm-hmm. big EU project where everything's torn up. So when I was there, it was torn up. But okay. it's supposed to be done by the end of 2023. So when travelers go now, it's going to be gorgeous, really a great place to go. So I really enjoyed my stay there.
Excellent.
Two of my favorite places to eat. One was my first one-star Michelin restaurant. Mm-hmm. It was in Poznan, and it's called Muga, M-U-G-A.
Okay.
And it started as a wine cellar, but now it is a restaurant attached to it. And it's a very fine dining, and it's almost impossible to get a reservation, but somehow they got me one. And now I know what the big deal is. It was a tasting menu with wine pairing, and they were so lovely and nice. And I didn't see the tab, but that will be a very special experience if someone can get a reservation. And then on the alternative, this is where I had the wonderful cheap pierogi at a street place with a window where all the little ladies are making pierogi as fast as you can imagine. And then you go inside and you tell them yep, how you yep. want to cook. So that probably was like $5 for a huge plate of pierogi. So I had two extremes in Poznan.
And do you remember the name of the pierogi?
Yes, it was called Pierogies. I have it in my list. And maybe you can put it on the notes when you
excellent. I'll put it in the called. Show notes.
Oh, it was the best place. And I went inside, and being the travel writer that I am, I went up and I started to video. And let me tell you, this woman's head popped up and she gave me this. She terrified me because she was so stern, but she meant their faces. But she let me take the photo low, and I got to see these hands flying, making the pierogi. So that was okay with her.
Okay, got it.
Pierogies.
Okay. That seems like something I can remember. Excellent. Anything else on Poznan, or shall we wrap up our itinerary?
Let's see. I think we're done with Poznan.
Okay. What else should people know before they book their trip to Poland?
It's very budget friendly, and it's in the center of Europe, not Eastern Europe. Don't say yep. that anymore. So it's easy to get to. It's got an international airport. It's beautiful green spaces. That's something I was not expecting.
Okay.
And wonderful history. And the people just were friendly and warm. It was a lively place.
Okay. Excellent. You are standing in the prettiest spot you saw in these three cities in Poland. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Gosh, they were all so individual, but I'll have to say my evening when it was just turning dusk in Krakow. In this mm-hmm. big city center where it was all pedestrian traffic and people were just wandering in this beautiful evening with all the lights coming on in these beautiful old medieval buildings and music playing. And that was really spectacular.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Poland.
Oh gosh, the guide that I had in Warsaw, she was trying to teach me how to speak Polish. Okay. And let me tell you, that was comical. They have consonants and the word, the letters don't make any sense. And they spell with a W, but it's pronounced V and it's all different. So me just trying to get my head wrapped around the Polish language made me laugh.
Okay. And if you had to summarize Poland in just three words, what three words would you choose?
Okay. Okay, let's see. Let me think. I would say history,
okay.
culture,
yep.
and warm hospitality.
Okay. Excellent. Our guest again has been Sharon Kurtz from SharonKKurtz.com. Now, Sharon, I know that you are usually writing for someone else. So can we send someone to SharonKKurtz.com for your writings on Poland, or should we set, do we need to send them somewhere else?
No, actually, on my site, I've written so far 4 articles about my experience in Poland, and they'll all be on my site.
Excellent. And if we wanted to pick one that we're going to send people to, which one are we going to link to in the show notes here?
Let's see. I think my last one, it was for a publication called Go Nomad. And sure. It was about a gastronomic journey through Poland. And it tells about my restaurant experiences and a little bit about each city. So that is the most all-encompassing of the articles.
Got it. Okay. Yes. In fact, Max from Go Nomad has been a guest on the show before, talking about, I want to say Corsica or Sardinia, and I'd have to look up. I think it was Corsica. Excellent. Sharon, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing with us your newfound love for Poland.
Thank you, Chris.
Special thanks to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. Just interviewed one of the patrons of the show for an upcoming episode that I think you'll enjoy. If you're interested in learning more about becoming a patron of the show, go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. We have some great shows coming up for you, so stay tuned or subscribe if you have not already. We have shows coming up on North Tasmania, on the island of Kyushu in Japan, an Australia train trip, and Reunion Island off the coast of Madagascar. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.